This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
From the capital of Texas, you're listening to the Austin Anthem Podcast. My name is Landon Cottom, and I'm joined by Jeremiah Bentley.
Hey there, my name is Jeremiah Bentley, and I'm joining y'all from the beautiful patio of Oscar Blues and outside the stadium.
Yeah, we're very close to the stadium, again, like we were last time. But we are here this time for Austin Anthem's now annual MLS First Kick celebration. So today's the first day of the 2020 MLS season. This is the last season not involving Austin FC, so it's a pretty exciting day.
Yeah, it is, for sure. It's crazy to think along this journey that we're less than 1 year away from having a team. And so hopefully we won't be at Oscar Blues next year because we'll be somewhere in a stadium watching an actual match.
Yeah, for sure. So today we've got a few different guests, but we're gonna drop in an interview with Tujal and Nisal Rahman from the podcast 25 Stories That Made MLS. This is a really great podcast. It's little bite-sized episodes of history lessons about the history of Major League Soccer. So highly recommended. I think you guys are really gonna like this interview. We're also, as always, gonna do Austin FC and Austin Anthem news and updates. We will also be joined by writer and friend of the podcast, Phil West, doing some CONCACAF Champions League reviews and also MLS season predictions. So if you want to hold anything over Phil's head later in the season, this will be the part to take notes on. So this is probably our second biggest event of the year that we're at, right? Of the year so far. I imagine there will be bigger ones in the future. But the next one we're having here in a couple of weeks is going to be probably the biggest one that we've ever thrown. So do you want to talk a little bit about that, Jeremiah?
Yeah, I'd love to. So those of you that joined us last year, we had our first celebration of the beautiful game at Rustic Tap, the first weekend of a giant festival that happens to be in Austin every spring, somewhere, you know, in the south by southwestish part of the country, but, you know, not specifically affiliated,
just nearby
and co-located. Yeah, perfect. And so this year, in Empire Control Room, on the Sunday of the first weekend of that festival, which would be March 15th, that we'll be there. So we'll do soccer. There's going to be another FIFA tournament. We're going to have some special guests. We'll have some neat activities. That's going to go on all day long during the day. So we're going to start around 9 a.m. And there's actually a giant crawfish boil going on that afternoon, too. And so we'll join up with that. So it is crawfish boil season, so that's another added advantage of it. So we'll be at Empire Control Room then, and we're going to have matches on from around the world that day. So it's actually a pretty big day, and it's a pretty big day like all across the world. So we're going to have Atletico play, Spurs and United out of the Premier League, West Ham and Wolves. There's also the Bundesliga, and then we'll end our day around 12:30 with the Revs and Timbers. It's just like it's a full day of soccer, chance to get out and have a good time. Anybody that went last year can remember, like, it was super fun. We had a whole bunch of people come through,
yeah,
and we just wanted to do it all again.
Last year was insane. Like, we opened the doors, I think, at 8. That's when the first game started. And I think West Ham was our first game last year, too. And we had a bunch of random West Ham fans show up early in the morning. And before 10 a.m., we had hundreds of people pass through. So, I'm excited to see what this year brings, because last year was pretty epic. And I think, as everything we've done, it's only grown since then. So, yeah, I think it's definitely something to put on your calendar.
Yeah, and the space is a real good draw. Empire Control Room is a really cool place. And it's also really close to the convention center. So it'll be in the middle of the action. You know, we're a little bit on WEX 6 and a little bit off of that last year. Another positive change is that, bring your kids. It's family friendly. So you can bring everybody along and sort of enjoy and hang out and have a good time. Last year we didn't have that. We didn't have that availability because of the rules of the place, but that'll be a change this year too.
Yeah, that'll be a positive for sure. So we're going to take a real quick break. We'll be right back with Phil West, and we're going to talk some MLS music.
So we're here for the opening weekend of MLS, but strangely, in some ways, teams have already been playing, and so I think one thing that we can dig into is hot CONCACAF Champions League action. The matches they start in February, which is in the preseason. We'll get into kind of what that means a little bit, but the round of 16 has happened over the last couple weeks. We're down to 8, and 4 of the 5 MLS teams have made it through the quarterfinals. So we've got Phil West here on with us, U.S. soccer expert, who's going to break down what this looks like and kind of some of the challenges of it and talk through where we stand today. So, Phil, I mean, what were your impressions of the round of 16?
God, I love CONCACAF Champions League. It's like it's all the team versus team action that you get from Champions League, but it's all the wacky hijinks that you get from CONCACAF. It's so much fun. But it's been great. It's been really fun, entertaining soccer. I mean, it's not always the best soccer, obviously, because there is that kind of CONCACAF quality to it. Again, especially for the MLS teams, they're kind of early in the season. But it's been fun. It's been great so far.
So far, yeah, and then you do get the Central American teams that are like playing in a cow pasture with a track around it, and that kind of experience overall. I think some of the clubs probably suffered from that. So 4 of the 5 teams made it through the quarters that made it. So it was LAFC, New York City FC, Montreal Impact, and Atlanta United. And this is a little bit surprising because MLS clubs face a lot of challenges in that tournament, the structure of it. So, Landon, can you maybe talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think there's two main things. Phil, you can add some stuff in if you think of others. But I think the main ones are fatigue. These teams are not 90-minute match fit yet. And we were talking about that, and someone said, well, that's their fault. They should be prepared for this point in the season. But it's not that simple. Like if you're prepared for this part of the season, then you're going to crap out by mid-season and you're going to be worthless when it comes playoff time. And so like being fit and being match fit are different things. And so you can see it in these games that some of these teams looked really great for 60, 65 minutes. And after that, they just fell off and disappeared. And you could see that their legs were gone after that point.
Yeah, that's the thing, too, because the Mexican and the Central American teams, I mean, they're 2/3 of their way through their season.
Right.
So, you know, again, they're dealing with, you know, kind of injury and kind of their own fatigue a little bit in a way, but they're also kind of much further along, much further into the groove. And
right.
Again, with the Mexican teams, I mean, they're, you know, like about 7-8 games into the second half of their season, the clausura. You know, Mexican teams, as you know, they split the season in two. The championship was a little bit delayed this year. Because Monterrey was in the FIFA Club World Cup. But, yeah, still, you have these teams that kind of a much different place in their season than the MLS teams, and that's always been, like, kind of the challenge for MLS teams.
Yeah, that's the other thing I wanted to bring up was form, is that they're not only not in shape, but they just – a lot of these guys haven't played together. If you brought in new players, then – they haven't played together.
Yeah,
they haven't had time to like really gel together. And so, yeah, these Central American and Mexican teams are in really good form right now because they're mid-season, and they're also in really good shape, which these MLS teams are neither.
Yeah, like LAFC, for example, they have a brand-new goalie, and he's a little adventure time out there. So that
I love watching Vermeer play. He's like one of my new favorite MLS players.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun, yeah. So, but again, I think LAFC fans throughout the season at points will miss Tyler Miller.
I don't know. I think what Vermeer is going to bring in entertainment value.
Well, sure. But sometimes that's not always what you want from a goalie.
Yeah.
You sometimes want a really bored, staid goalie who's just going to stop things and distribute in sensical ways.
So do we think that this, I know this gets asked every year, and the answer every year ends up being no, but is this a year that an MLS team can win this tournament?
I mean, we've come real close. I mean, the thing that's good about this, I mean, unfortunately, the Sounders, who I think actually had a really good shot at
I agree.
They got bumped by Olympia, which was strange, but certainly I think, you know, LAFC and Atlanta and NYCFC all have the horses. I mean, they all have some challenging teams to face in their quarterfinal rounds. They're all going up, I think they're all going up against Liga
they're
MX
all
teams.
Playing Mexican teams.
Yeah, Atlanta's playing what, America, then LAFC.
I have the bracket here. So Atlanta's playing Club America, LAFC's playing Cruz Azul.
Yeah.
NYCFC is playing Tigres.
Uh-huh.
And Montreal's playing Olympia, who beat Seattle.
Right. Yeah. So I think of those, maybe Atlanta's got the best chance. Again, because they are a really cohesive team. I mean, they have lost some key pieces, but obviously when you have Joseph, you have Pity, you can do a lot of damage. And I feel like they in a way kind of have the easiest path. I mean, NYCFC, I think their talent gets a little underestimated. And Tigres has been kind of shaky. Tigres needed maybe the most amazing, wackiest, concafiest goal I've ever seen to advance. They were almost out. And if y'all didn't see it, yeah, check the clip out for sure. In the fifth minute of extra time, they had a free kick from outside the box. Vargas sent it in to Nahuel, the goalie for Tigres. The goalie. Who headed it in. Perfect header.
It was beautiful.
It was amazing. Yeah, and it wasn't a fluky thing either. It looked like he was actually practiced and like they'd done this before on the pitch in practice, and yeah, it was amazing. So
yeah, Atlanta has dynamic attackers, mm-hmm. which you need someone who can just put a game on their shoulders and take care of it. Joseph Martinez has done that several times, and right. It looks like maybe PT Martinez is coming into form a little bit now. Mm-hmm. Barco is looking better than he did in seasons past. So, and then the defense is going to be fairly solid, I think, as well. So, yeah, I think Atlanta has a decent shot at winning.
Yeah, and then they have the confidence of the Campeones Cup winning, too, as well, which, again, is a tournament that, in a way, is maybe designed for MLS to win because that comes at the very end of the Liga MX season. And, so that's MLS is about two-thirds of the way through.
Winners
the
of MLS versus winners of Liga MX, right?
Yeah.
All right, so do we want to move on to Phil West's MLS predictions
sure,
for 2020? All right, do you want to guide us through this, Jeremiah?
Yeah, I'd love to do that. So Phil West, expert. And, when we talked yesterday, when we were day drinking yesterday, I do want to go back to one thing about the tournament. It was amazing. Like, that was like a no-ball deal from the keeper. Like, that guy... It clearly didn't accidentally bounce off his head. Like,
it was a clean header. Yeah,
it was a clean, amazing goal.
Directed, and yeah, it was exactly where it had to go.
Yeah, I've seen plenty of players that are more qualified that haven't done that in recent.
Yeah, and it happened so fast. I mean, I saw the goal, but it was like, wait, why is the goalie here? Why is he in on the celebration? Wait, what? What did he? Did he? Oh my God, he did.
Yeah, he made the celebration. So let's just start with the easiest one. So if you're gonna pick, Kate. Eastern Conference, Western Conference, Supporters Shield. Let's talk regular season.
Okay.
Who are your favorites?
I would say LAFC and NYCFC, which are probably pretty boring, predictable.
It's the most, yes. It's the least interesting thing. That'd be the exact same as last year, right?
Yeah, I guess it would be, yeah. But again, I mean, those teams have largely kept their cores. I think they are... the most talented teams with maybe kind of the least numbers of questions going in. I mean, NYCFC does have a new manager, but I think Cabrera's a little underrated. I think he's going to have a really solid season. And I just think some of the other teams are going to have growing pains along the way. I think, Atlanta United, they had some weirdness with DeBoer last year, and that might continue a little bit. I don't think that's necessarily going to be smooth, although, I could definitely see Atlanta getting through the playoffs in the East and advancing to MLS Cup. I think the Union, they're going to have little slides here and there, but I think they'll still be up there. It really pains me to say this, but I think the Crew is going to have a really good season.
Yeah,
I think they'll be in the playoff mix.
I think they're going to come into one of the later questions we have.
Okay.
but, yeah, so what do you think of Seattle? I really like Seattle from just what I've seen in Champions League, and they're still missing several of their best players, or some of their best players didn't play in these games, so... I'm pretty high on what I've seen from them so far.
I mean, the big question's on defense. I mean, they did have some aging defensive players, but they have switched out a lot of those pieces. So I think that's going to be questioning. This Jao Paulo guy looks like he's the real deal.
Yeah,
he's a defensive midfielder, I believe, from Brazil. And
he played a little bit more advanced in CONCACAF Champions League, but that's because Svensson is missing probably. Mm-hmm. So they're playing Roldan and Svensson as the double pivot, and then Jao Paulo a little bit further forward. But I think once they have... Nico Lodero, whenever he comes back, he'll be playing a bit further up.
I mean, yeah, Lodero, Rodriguez, Moraes, I mean, together they're going to, I think, obviously produce a lot of goals. I mean, again, yeah, just the questions though of the back and like what they're going to do in the back. I mean, Stefan Fry is solid, but I think he's like 34 now. He's kind of definitely getting up there. I mean, I also just think that the West is going to be kind of a grind compared to the East as well. Just because there's a lot of, I think, really good teams that, we haven't talked about, for example, Dallas or the Galaxy or, even Houston has some interesting new offensive pieces with Darwin Quintero. So I think that maybe, although Seattle might be kind of more built for kind of start to finish MLS Cup run, I think the playoffs are going to be really, really challenging for them.
So we've talked, expansion team-wise, we've talked a lot about the drama because they both have, like, a lot of inherent drama, both Nashville and Inter-Miami. And we haven't talked a lot about the rosters at all or whether they have – are they Atlanta and L.A. or are they something more like, Cincinnati and Orlando? So how do you feel about how both those clubs are going to do? And do you have one that you think is going to do better than the other?
Yeah, I mean, I do think Miami's going to do better than Nashville just because I think overall they have some better pieces. And I think Luis Robles was a really big pickup. Obviously, having a veteran goalkeeper with a lot of leadership makes a big difference. Pizarro, obviously, I think a lot of people are, including myself, are intrigued by what he can do. Again, I kind of thought that maybe if he had held out another year, he was going to be Austin's first designated player, and obviously that's not going to happen now. So I'm really curious about him. Pellegrini looks like he's going to be really good. Nashville, I couldn't actually figure out kind of what they were doing in terms of the roster build. And obviously with getting Zimmerman now from LA, I think what they're doing is kind of being more defense first.
So, yeah, it looks like they've built a fairly solid, like, the middle of the field there is going to be solid.
Like, they're not going to be Nashville. Nashville's not going to be Cincinnati, or they're not going to be Orlando. They're not going to let in, 69 or 70 goals for the season. But at the same time, Dominique Baggi is probably your best bet to score goals on that team, and he's kind of journeyed around from Dallas, Colorado.
Is it Hani Mukhtar? Is that one of the other attacking players that they've signed?
Yeah.
I think people are talking highly of him, but again, we just haven't seen him yet. So.
Right, exactly. And just kind of how long does it take to acclimate and adjust? I mean, Pity Martinez was a South American Player of the Year, and he had like kind of a rocky first year in MLS too. And it seemed like he came into that as kind of an instant Almiron replacement and was going to do great. So I think Miami, just kind of based on their talent, is going to do a little bit better and might sneak into the playoffs. Nashville's strangely in the West this year. Again,
so yeah.
I assume that fixes itself next year. I assume there's another incoming team that's going to end up in the West, and they'll get slotted into the East along with Charlotte, I'm imagining, right? So, but at the same time, that kind of speaks to, okay, you've got to get past, LA and LAFC and Houston and Dallas and Seattle and Portland, and that just seems like it's going to be really challenging for them to make any kind of serious headway.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was gonna go on. I love that the next question we have here is who will be the most improved team from last year, and the only option we have is Columbus. So, Phil, do you feel
that was just my pick?
Do you feel like anybody other than Columbus will be the most improved team from last year?
Well, I think Colorado. I mean, they with Robin Fraser, they had a lot of his. He was the coach that came on about halfway through. They were like a dumpster fire basically for the first half of the season, and then they did pick it up. They did play some interesting games, and they did pick up some players in the offseason. But I do think Columbus is really that one team, as much as I don't like to say it. Obviously, they didn't make the playoffs last year, but they were solid. They were kind of right in there, especially towards the end of the season. And I think Lucas Ellerayan is going to be really interesting, the pickup from Tigres.
Yeah, so that's kind of the Pipo Higuain replacement, is Ellerayan. And then they've also added Nagby, which is pretty big.
Yeah.
And then these aren't new additions, but both of their outside backs were injured either most or all of last season. And they're two of the best outside backs in the league. So Valenzuela and Offal. So I think that's going to be a huge addition as well.
Yeah, they'll make the playoffs, I think. I would be more shocked if they didn't make the playoffs than if they did.
All right, and then we talked about a few new players. So we've talked a lot about Chicharito and the cultural effect of him, but when you think about Chicharito as a player, like, how do you see him slotting in, and do you see him really making a big difference? How do you think he fits into that system?
I mean, I think he'll be good. I mean, I think they're going to have the same problem maybe that they did last year, is that they just kind of tended to cross it in and try to get their, again, Zlatan, obviously, in the case last year, trying to get him the ball so he could sort of do his things. And I think they were maybe kind of a little bit intimidated by him, like, if they weren't crossing correctly, if they weren't getting him kind of enough service, that it was just kind of eating away at the team. I don't think, obviously, with Chicharito that it's going to be, like, kind of the same dynamic mentally, but Chicharito is kind of a service-dependent center forward, too. So, I mean, I think Pavone is going to be really crucial to how well Chicharito does. I mean, I think, obviously, Chicharito's got the talent to probably get, 12 to 15 goals on his own. I mean, I think that's kind of his floor. But in terms of, is he going to get into that, like, 20, 25, even 30 range, I think a lot of that is going to depend on how well he clicks with Pavone and just kind of how well, like, again, Legette, I mean, he's had, obviously, injury battles throughout his career and all that, but he's a pretty crucial piece of what they do. Dos Santos, all that. It just kind of depends on what they're going to put behind Chicharito and what they're going to be able to give him in the way of key passes.
I agree with you. I don't know that he's going to – I think he'll score a fair amount of goals. I don't think he's going to be considered one of the best – players in the league at like top three players in the league at the end of the season. But yeah. I think in the other stuff that he does, the less glorious stuff that he does, he's going to make LA Galaxy a better team.
Yeah, I think he can be top 10 though. I mean, I think I think in terms of Golden Boot, I mean, I think he'll be in there.
Yeah, he's not going to break Carlos Vela's records or anything, but I think he's going to make the team much better.
But Carlos Vela might not even break Carlos Vela's record this year.
That's fine.
Yeah,
I think he could like do half the numbers he did last season and mm-hmm. still be like in talks of like MVP status. So
yeah, although I don't know if like Brian Rodriguez was having a bad night for LAFC the other night.
But he didn't look very good the other night.
He was
just
whiffing on some like pretty easy sitters that could have helped him. That whole game was weird. I mean, I'm really surprised LAFC pulled that off. I mean, it just looked like one of those games in the first half where ultimately things were not going to go their way, that everything was kind of conspiring against them despite all the chances that they were creating.
So what other new players are you excited about this season? We already talked a little bit about Giampaolo, Chicharito. Who else are you?
I mean, I mentioned Zellerayan. I mean, I'm curious to see like kind of what he's going to do. And just, again, the potential high comedy of key passes to Yazzie's artist. See what happens there. And then Pizarro at Miami. I mean, again, I don't know. Again, with the first year team, it's really hard to understand like kind of what they're going to look like, especially with Diego Alonso as a coach who comes in, you know, kind of brand new to MLS from, I believe he was at Monterey before, right? So just kind of the idea of just kind of so much newness, you know, and again, brand new stadium, brand new franchise, bringing all these people together, how that's going to gel. But I just think Pizarro is such a talent, and I'm really, really upset that Austin didn't end up getting him, that I'm just curious to see what he does, you know. And again, maybe if it doesn't work out, maybe there's a way to get him in the expansion draft. I don't think we're getting him in the expansion draft. but those and then obviously just Chicharito and see what he does there. That's, you know, I'm definitely curious to see that. So
all right, well, Phil, thanks so much for joining us today.
Absolutely, yeah, that was fun.
All right, let's move on to that interview with Nichol and Tudel Rahman from the 25 Stories That Made MLS, and we'll be right back after that. My guests today are Tudel and Nichol Rahman from the podcast 25 Stories That Made MLS. Guys, thanks so much for joining me.
Of course, man. Thanks for having us.
All right. So before we got into anything else, I just wanted to ask you, what got you into MLS?
For me, it was the success of the 2002 World Cup. And that makes sense considering my age, I think. Right?
Yeah.
I would say so.
What about you, Tudel? Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm saying I was 13.
Yeah.
So that makes sense, you know.
I remember the 2002 World Cup very clearly. I mean, like waking up super early in the morning.
Yeah, because it was
in the middle of the night to like watch the games. I mean, we both play soccer growing up. And because of that, like, we grew up in Jersey, so went to a few MetroStars game, but I didn't really get into the league, into it, like, hard, until, like, Freddy Adu. So Freddy Adu coming in 2004, went to a game, his first game in the stadium, and a lot of people were out. He scored, but we ended up winning, and I got really into it. I was in college at the time, I think. So that was probably the first year when I was really into the league, and every year ever since then, I was basically a hardcore fan.
Yeah, and you guys do an episode that heavily features Freddy Adu, so I imagine there's a lot of people who kind of share that same origin story as you.
Yeah, I think for me, it was like important to do that because, it's an origin story for me, and also I feel like whenever you hear the words Freddy Adu now, it's like cautionary tale, and I think it's super unfair because he did a lot for the league. He got a lot of people into it, so me included.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because I think you're right. People just think like of how big of a flop he was. And yeah, he really did do some really big things for soccer in this country, because at the time, people didn't know that was going to be the case. And so if you see this young phenom, then it's exciting in that moment, regardless of what happens later on.
Yeah, and if you look at, I mean, the attendance bumps, like, it's the second biggest attendance bump, only behind David Beckham. So
he was
a legitimate. We say in our podcast, passing the mom test. He's a legitimate star of passing the mom test.
Yeah. So 25 Stories That Made MLS is the podcast. I've really enjoyed it. I've learned a lot of new stories, and then some of the stories that I already knew, it kind of helped me put them into chronological order and kind of know where they fit into the greater context of things. So what made you guys want to create this podcast, and what did you expect it to become?
Yeah, it's a good question. I was listening to a podcast called 50 Things That Made the Modern Economy at the time, which is like basically a...
Which is the nerdiest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, it's like a super nerdy, super nerdy podcast. But it's basically stories of like inventions that seem pretty mundane at the time, but then eventually like unlock some sort of revolution that made a lot of other things possible and had a huge effect in everyone's lives. And at the same time I was listening to the podcast, like the 24th season of MLS ended, and I was getting kind of like depressed about it. And I realized the next season is a pretty big landmark. So, you know, living in Atlanta, a lot of the fans here who are super into the league have only been in the league 3 or 4 years. And so I thought it'd be interesting to like write about stories that happened a while back, 15, 20 years ago, that help explain how the league is today. And so that was sort of the impetus of it. I took the idea. I went to my brother. and then he listened to the podcast. I was like trying to show him, and
I was mostly confused as to like, how do you think we're going to get this done? Cause yeah. He showed me that podcast, and it's like an English professional voice actor, professional studio, no background noise, like thousands of dollars of equipment. And it's just like, we're not going to be able to do this.
Yeah.
So we have to do something a little different. I figured that, you know, if he can, you know, rock his knowledge and really shine on the data side of things, and if I could just kind of be there, I'm basically, in a way, the audience, you know, I'm a guy who has watched MLS for a long time, but not to the level that my brother has. I mean, I've watched the league for a long time, but I'm not tracking stats. I'm not that concerned about the business side of things. So it's basically my brother going, breaking down the history of things while there's another fan who's there with him. And that kind of creates like a nice back and forth, kind of casual conversation to like stats and historical monetary figures. And
yeah.
I think that makes it an easy listen and an interesting listen.
Yeah, and you guys don't have the elaborate production value like you said this other one you mentioned had, but I think that goes to show that if you have just good quality content, that people will enjoy it and people will listen to it.
I make fun of it all the time. I draw attention to it when I don't need to. Like, it's raining. You know? If you hear things, it's raining. Our dog's in the room. Yeah. Deal with it. You know? But I don't know, it adds a flavor to it because it's just like, we're just trying to have fun with it, you know?
Yeah. I meant to ask you this too. Who are y'all's MLS teams?
Yeah, mine's easy. I grew up in New Jersey, watched the Metro Stars.
I also grew up there, man.
Yeah. But I am a New York Rebels fan. But what about you, man?
Okay. All right. So again, I think we mentioned this on a different pod. We are going to have some fights over this. I'm an Atlanta United fan. I moved here 3 years ago in the inaugural. Like, I moved here, and then within a month or two, it was just like they're kicking off their first season ever. And the culture was just everything that I would want. You know, like, I have a local bar to go to that shows the games. People are really into it. People are marching to the stadium. Everyone's invested. People who don't even care about the sport still rock flags of Atlanta United. Like, the culture is here. So for me, it was just really hard not to like kind of jump on board and try to support the team and whatever.
But I
still watch Red Bulls games. I still root for them. I still root against NYCFC. Yeah, I have no reason to do that anymore. I still actively do it. They played in CCL earlier tonight, and by the way, we're recording the Montreal game, so no spoilers. But as far as NYCFC goes, they're playing tonight, and they're playing at, you know, Red Bull Arena, and viscerally, I felt something negative.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah,
be upset you want. You know, good.
So, Tuto, I could hear in your voice a little bit that you don't think that him switching teams was an acceptable move.
Listen, man, it's like you throwing away multiple years of rooting for a team, a team that is like famous for not winning, and then coming to a city that is just drunk off power, just like literally wins from day one, wins the MLS Cup in year two ever. Yeah, I'm a little salty. There's a little salt in there. That being said, like I would say, I have a lot of friends who moved down here from Jersey and New York, and almost all of them have switched allegiances to Atlanta United. It's very easy to get caught up in it. Like the entire city loves the team, which is very cool for the league in general. It's very cool.
I'm just gonna name drop Sergio Galvan Ray.
Oh,
for
God.
No reason, just to prove the OG that heads I also was a fan and in ways I still am.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that those, especially those first couple of seasons in Atlanta, it would have been hard to live in that city and not fall in love with that team. And so, Nital, don't let him beat up on you too much, because I'm a younger brother as well. And so I understand what it's like. So in doing research for these shows, what was something that you learned that really surprised you?
On my side of things, I learn every episode. my brother does all the research. Like, give him all the credit on that side of things, because it's true. I read a very loose outline on what he wants to touch on in the episode. Most of the business stuff, I would not know anything about, and I'm learning for the first time. As far as players go and what year it is, I have memories. But for me, the whole thing is a learning process. Again, like the entire setup of the show, I think, works because it's kind of the expert with sitting next to the layman's. And I'm definitely the layman's. But yeah, my brother does all the research, so I'll let him talk about this one.
Yeah, I, for me, the because we try to tell stories in the voice, when it's possible, in the voice of a person in the story. So not, instead of saying this fact and this fact, this fact, we try to, as much as we can, make the person in the story be the hero. And so in most of our stories that are about clubs entering the league, so it's usually around whoever the owner was and why they were passionate about getting the league. For some people, it's because they were real estate moguls, and other people, it's like they care about the sport itself. So so the one that was really surprising that I was not expecting at all is Toronto's story, which we did an episode on. And that's important because, you know, Toronto FC is one of the biggest clubs in the league, probably the second mega club in the league, and the first one in Canada in terms of expansion out there. So when I was doing the research, I was assuming, you know, hey, like, who owns this club and why did they get into it? And, you know, the owner of Toronto FC is Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment, which is normal. You know, a lot of these are like sub companies that own parts of MLS. But usually there's still a person behind it. And so as I was looking at the research, I couldn't really track down who the person was. And so I was like, all right, who started this company? And it went all the way back to like the 1940s with Conn Smythe, the guy from hockey. And then the story became very much about like how that company went through the hands of so many different people. And it was like sort of like a Scorsese flick or an episode of Succession where like deals were made and backstabbing was happening and people were going to jail.
Time, yeah.
And like there was embezzlement, and then like the club was almost run down, and another club,
and Muhammad Ali's the last straw.
And like, And there was one guy who was like, did a great job with the business side, but like had a personal debt to the point where like he sold the majority of the company to solve his personal debt.
That episode was just nuts, man.
Yeah.
It was just crazy.
And it ends up of all things, the main owner of Maple Leafs.
It's a pension fund.
A pension fund for the Toronto, so the Ontario Teachers Union, right? And like that is the owner of the club when it started. And so that episode ends up becoming a lot of like that versus like the normal, you know, like the normal thing that we do, which is more about like the owner and like the owner and why soccer was super important. So I don't know how it was for anyone else, but for us, that was a super fun episode.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that one as well. Maybe MLS will be so culturally relevant at some point in the future that they will make like an HBO series or something out of that story.
God, I would love that. Succession.
Hey, man, I mean, if you go on ESPN Plus, I think.
Yeah.
And their documentary of LAFC.
Yeah, they did a great job, man. Yeah.
It's very well shot.
Yeah, and the TFC story would be a little bit different.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the TFC story would be
If they happened to do it at that time, it would have been amazing.
It'd be amazing.
So, Toodle, you are a self-proclaimed nerd, and MLS is kind of a great league for nerds due to all of its idiosyncrasies. And so in a couple of the episodes of 25 Stories, y'all have talked about the salary structures of MLS and how kind of ridiculously complicated they are. So what is one thing that you think that they could change about the salary budget structure that would make it simpler and maybe easier for fans to understand?
You want me to take this one first?
Yeah, go for it.
If the question is what should MLS do differently, I'm going to be bold and I'm going to be the jerk here. Nothing.
Oh, wow.
I don't think they should do anything differently so that fans can understand how the business is run.
Okay.
I honestly believe that. It's working.
Yeah.
If people are confused about it, that's.
But how do you get
people? But how do you get the more casual people to understand
it? Yeah.
I don't know. Implement it in fantasy. Like, put it, like, if you want to teach people what TAM and GAM are, like, I don't know, put it in your fantasy MLS app somehow.
Like if I traded you Joseph Martinez instead of getting another player.
Yeah, I get allocation money instead of a player.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be amazing.
Because I've learned so much just playing FIFA.
Yeah.
As embarrassed as I am to admit that,
I don't think that's an uncommon thing. I think a lot of people in America, in a lot of places, learned so much about soccer from FIFA.
From
so
video games, right?
Yeah, and like, I think that would be brilliant.
And we were talking about nerds, right? Like, I'm a video game nerd. Like, I think we had an episode. Yeah, we had an episode where we were talking about, it was David Beckham. And my brother mentioned that LA Galaxy didn't have to pay a transfer fee. And I was like, oh, so they waited until there was less than 6 months on his contract? And I only know that because of FIFA. You know, it's like, I'm not paying millions and millions of euro or dollars or pound, whatever, when I could just wait for their contract to almost expire. Then I'll nab them, and then they'll join when the next window.
Yeah.
Like, I only know that because of FIFA.
I like it. Let's definitely incorporate all the salary cap rules in MLS fantasy.
I'm into it.
Maybe FIFA... EA Sports, if you're listening, your recycled garbage.
Oh, no.
Since I'm being so bold right now, maybe you should really adjust your everything when it comes to MLS.
That'd be hilarious. Like some guy in like Europe is playing manager mode.
Yeah.
And he's like,
why is Tam and Gam not involved? This is unrealistic. Unsubscribe right now.
He's trying to do a transfer fee with like Major League Soccer and they're like, can't do it.
You know what's funny?
Fill the third DP spot.
The guy in Europe doesn't care, but let's put this out there for everybody in the US playing FIFA games right now. It's frustrating. It's so frustrating trying to acquire players or sell players. It's like, this is not accurate at all.
Are you talking about FIFA?
I'm talking about FIFA, and I'm talking about life, dog.
Dude, you've gone off the rails. One, let's definitely incorporate Tam and Gam into MLS Fantasy. Check.
Thank you.
Yes.
Two, hilarious idea to incorporate it to FIFA just to see people's minds explode in Europe.
It's too complicated.
It's way too complicated. So a realistic way for me to answer that question, if I was a commissioner, I would add more transparency to the league. And so, like,
similar
to you, like, I don't know if you need to change the rules per se, because, like, NFL has really complicated rules. NBA have really complicated rules. Most salary cap leagues do, right, wrong, or indifferent. But there's a level of subculture in the NBA of which you can follow the salary cap decisions that a GM does, because you know exactly how much cap is left per team. That's not a secret. You know exactly how many years a player is signed for and how much exactly the salary budget hit is for each one of those years. And MLS right now, even though I track basically out of the goodwill of my heart, like I track like where allocation moves between teams. It's impossible to know how much allocation a team has left. How much they've spent. Yeah. How much they've spent that year. How much do they have for the next year? Like, none of that stuff is available. It's not easy to track. So, like,
a lot of transactions are undisclosed.
Like, you don't know how much the players make or what their salary budget hit is. And so, like, it's impossible to track. And so it feels like a black box. But if you made it public and transparent, I think instead of it seen as like a hindrance, yeah, it might take a little bit of time to learn, but like once you learn it, it's another thing to follow. And in the off season, it's like very like, oh, you know, I'm a Rebels fan. And I know we just opened up this much cap space, which means we can afford these types of players. And now I'm more excited to see what the signings we're going to have. It adds something to it, you know?
And now that I'm calm, now that I'm calmed down and really thinking about this, I mean, yeah, transparency would help a lot, because then I think more people would be a bit more understanding of, like, Julian Gressel was,
yeah, that's a
you
good
know
point.
was given away to, if that's not even the right language there, but like Julian Gressel going to DC for a set amount of allocation money, the fans wouldn't freak out as much.
Yeah,
because when they hear the words allocation money, they're just like, it's meaningless. It means nothing.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's a good one. So like the Gressel trade, hopefully doesn't turn out for you for it. Like this, but like it could be similar to the Harden trade in basketball, where like everyone knew Oklahoma City couldn't keep all four players,
right?
So they had to pick one to trade away. They picked the wrong one. They should have traded Ibaka, but like everyone knew it, right? And so like that decision was made, and at the time you're like, woo, I don't know if I would do it, but you knew you had to trade someone because of the rules.
Yeah,
here you're like, they're just like, oh, we have to trade him because we can't afford it. We're like, can you not? I don't know. Like, we don't have any transparency to see, like, if you really can or cannot do it, you know?
I think that's a really great point, because there are plenty of people who are willing to, like, get into that kind of stuff. And actually really, there are people who probably enjoy that kind of stuff more than the actual game. And so if they did just, kind of make it a bit more transparent, there's plenty of nerds like us who would dig through those numbers and really enjoy doing that, probably. So that's a really interesting point.
100%.
So you've already said that you're planning on doing a Save the Crew episode as one of the last installments in this series. So without giving too much of the episode away, how much of an effect do you think the whole Save the Crew saga will have on the long-term legacy of Austin FC?
Long-term, I don't think much.
I would say not at all.
Not at all. I think the greater legacy of Save the Crew is much more relevant for the crew, and they should be super proud of what they accomplished.
Doesn't work in other sports.
Yeah, it doesn't really happen that much. And so like that, they should feel super proud, and that should be part of their identity moving forward. It's like a supporters club.
Grassroots
club.
We've been here.
Yeah. And so for the crew, super important. For MLS in totality, I think there's a legacy of clubs really succeed when the community embraces them and the supporters embrace them. And then that's what makes MLS clubs special, is when, you know, and different than other kind of sports franchises, even in the same city. But I think for you guys in Austin, like, to me, the legacy of your club is determined by you, and like the culture that you bring into the club, the rituals that you guys make are organically, what you make of the club and the connection and the identity that you guys craft together in the coming years, that's what's going to be the legacy of the club. I don't think having the owner being from the Columbus Crew owner is not going to be a long lasting thing.
Yeah, not at all. Unless like you wanted it to be, you know, like if just go if full people on in you. Austin were just like, we're all going to adopt a Zlatan mentality and be the villain. Yeah. All of us together. We're going to put up a giant TIFO, anti-Crew messages every game, even when the Crew is not playing us. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's yeah. Go ahead.
There's a lot of people early on that were saying like Austin should embrace this, like this villain mentality. And like, have you ever been to Austin?
It's like such a chill place
to be. That it's like, it just doesn't fit with the identity of the city. And so, yeah, but what you guys said is really encouraging to hear. And I agree with you. I think there's always going to be like a handful of people on Twitter who are like, I still hate Austin for what they did. But the truth is like, this is a multimillionaire making a business decision that was going to negatively affect one group of people and benefit another group of people. And there's a bunch of people in Austin who really like soccer who just happen to be that second group of people. So.
Right. I don't think the average Austin fan will care about the drama.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we have like, there's enough going for Austin right now. The fan response to just any little thing that's come out so far has been so big, and the season ticket deposits and just the more and more people we have coming out to Austin Anthem events every time. And we're still a year out from even kicking a ball. So it's all really encouraging. I think there's a huge opportunity to build something really special here. And if we are able to do that, and I think for the first few years, that will still be part of the storyline. But I think a few years after that, it's most people will not even think about it at all anymore.
Yeah. And I mean, the most important thing is you guys can craft your own identity. And obviously other MLS fan bases will be appreciative that you guys, you know, read up on the history. It's a plug for our podcast. It's the easy way to do that. But like read up on the history and respect some of the history but fundamentally your legacy is your legacy. And I don't think Save the Crew is part of the Crew legacy, and I think MLS's legacy, but you guys will have that more than every opportunity to make your own.
So looking at some of either the current storylines in the league or maybe potential storylines that you see starting to bubble up, if you guys were to continue this series on to the 26th, 27th, 28th story that made MLS, do you guys see any stories that are happening now or potential ones that you think would be those episodes?
Without having to change like the auspice of our podcast, like without pivoting into a different topic, you mean, right?
Yeah.
Like if we were to release the next
If we just go a few years into the future and you made another episode.
Yeah, I mean, it would depend where we land on the timeline. The one that I would want to definitely do an episode on, I don't know if it would be 26, 27 or something in the future. For me, it would be, I definitely would want an episode about the trend of pulling players from Liga MX. You know, that's kind of happening right now.
Yeah. That could be easily episode 26.
Yeah. It would very easily be talk about Pulido and
Chicharito. You know,
Chief Chicharito.
Oh, Chicharito's actually technically from Euro.
Yeah. But like,
but Chicharito and Vela are players who, It would have made a lot of sense for them to go play in Mexico instead of here, and they chose to play here instead. So I think they, even though they didn't come from Liga MX, I think they fall into that same narrative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I you know what? We're watching CCL right now. I mean, if we end this podcast and right around the same time, MLS wins the first CCL.
Then
that's
the first episode that comes out.
That would be a celebration episode. That'd be
super mega ultra bonus ode.
Yeah.
Celebration sode.
Probably won't happen, but like that would be amazing.
Nah, I don't know, man. It could.
That's what the hope is all about.
It could.
Yeah.
CCL fever.
That's also
baby.
Us every year. Like, yeah, it could happen.
It can happen, and it never does.
All right. So thanks a lot for doing this, guys. This is a lot of fun. Listeners, definitely check out the 25 stories that made MLS. I think for people in Austin who are just now getting into MLS, this will do – it does a really great job of kind of putting our story in context of the greater history of the league. So I definitely recommend it. Tudel, Nitzel, thank you so much.
Appreciate it, man.
Man, thank you so much.
We'd like to thank the Ramen Brothers for their time, and that is such a good show. And so I'd really encourage everyone to go out and listen to 25 Stories That Made MLS. I've learned a ton, and I think they do a good mix of like sort of talking about rule changes and outside things, and also then also talking about, you know, players and owners and just the culture behind it. So it's been an interesting learn for me as someone who has not, like, an expert on the league and hasn't spent a I'm not Phil West. I am no Phil West, and none of us are. So, but it's been a really interesting journey.
Yeah, so one more event we want to mention is on March 4th, Austin FC is going to have another meet and greet. This one's going to be down south at Valentina's Tex-Mex Barbecue. If y'all haven't been to Valentina's, you should go there regardless of this event because it's very, very good.
Yeah, it was amazing. That was one of the highlights of the Yeti event was the fact that Valentina's.
Oh, nice.
So free Valentina's barbecue is a great reason to get to any kind of event.
Yeah, so this is going to be featuring Claudio Reyna and Josh Wolf. So these have all been really interesting. And we've actually, I was afraid with some of these earlier ones that this is going to be more of like a, just kind of like a glamour press conference type thing. But we've actually learned new information at quite a few of these things. So they've definitely been worth making the trip to go to. So y'all should check that out.
Yeah, they do a good job of like sort of understanding the crowd, knowing the people are there like really into, they're really into soccer. They're in the league and like what the team's going to do from a real practical perspective. And they've been really open about discussing that too. One of the things that Josh mentioned on Media Day, because we get, he gets to go do that now.
Yeah.
We get to do
MLS
that now.
MLS Media Day.
MLS Media Day was they talked to him about building out their targets ahead of 2021. And he mentioned being in Colombia for the U23 Conmebol Bowl tournament. And they're looking at qualifying as well. So it seems like young international players and South American players is really a focus for the club, which is something that we've sort of heard and thought before, but it's good to hear that practically.
That's cool to hear that he's actually now at a point where he's like, I'm going and watching these players play. And like, is probably making a list at this point.
Yeah, that's neat. So, y'all, if you go, you should ask him about that, certainly.
All right, anything else?
Well, let's take it out of here with a little bit of Austin Anthem news. So, again, we would encourage everyone to get involved or hang out with the Zenate Musical Collective. And can you talk about the next big event that we have coming up on that front?
Yeah, so that next one is going to be Tuesday, March 31st. This is at Tacoba, which is, I think this is our first official, like, big event that we've done at Tacoba. So that should be pretty cool. It's going to be from 5:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. The last couple of these that we've had have been a lot of fun, so definitely come check one of these out. It's we've been separating these out into kind of instrumental practices and then these song and chant socials. The song and chant socials are more like a big musical party, so it's a little taste of what game day atmosphere is going to be like in the supporter section.
That's great, and the Instagram videos are so good out of this, and it just makes you want to be a part of it. I can barely chant. I definitely have no musical talent, but it's just a great reason to get out and have fun and hang out with a bunch of like-minded people. So I'd highly encourage everybody to go out to that. Tacoba, again, it's a really cool place on the east side to check out, too.
What else, Jeremiah?
So we're going to have events all throughout the spring. I think one of the next big ones after this is the last weekend in April. We're going to be part of a family day festival with the Austin Public Library. That'll be a day-long event, and we're going to partner up with the Parks Foundation, and there'll be a lot of cool stuff going on. And we'll give you more details on that as we get closer to it. You know, visit AustinAnthem.org, buy your membership, buy some merch, check out the Facebook group, which has the Grackle Nest seems to be getting a lot more active. Because, again, we're a year out from what we're going to do, so there's a lot more discussion going on. And the Reddit page is also pretty active, too, so engage with us that way. And always, we'd love to hear, like, what questions you have that you want us to address on the show or what topics or what people we want to hear from. So please share that with us so we can make this better for y'all.
Yeah, you can find us, me and Jeremiah, both on Twitter. I'll put our handles in the show notes. You can also send a message to podcast@austinanthem.org. As always, we want to remind you to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcasting app. We will be back soon with more Austin FC news, Austin Anthem updates, and guests. Until then, enjoy your soccer.